he's a rocky class. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. So, Politico points out that on tax day, Trump tax cuts remain deeply unpopular. And you go, how is it possible that tax cuts are impossible, are unpopular? How is that possible that people could be unhappy that they got free money? The reality is they actually didn't. And that what we know is, well, what we knew at the time when they were ramming it through. It was going to benefit the wildly wealthy and big corporations. They were going to buy back all of their shares, and they were going to make themselves even wealthier. We know that. In fact, as the number pointed out, the wealthiest 5% of Pennsylvanians received 53% of all the tax cuts this year. Yay! So glad we could help our wealth class out. So glad our sacrifice and our belt tightening is going to make them just a little richer. And here to share some thoughts on tax day and on the tax scheme, I've asked our good friend Mark Price to come back and share some thoughts with us. He's a labor economist there at the Keystone Research Center. Mark, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thank you. It's always wonderful to be here.
So we have a tax cut that is deep, according to Politico, deeply unpopular.
Yeah, and you know, I think you summarize it pretty well. It basically comes down to that most people haven't seen, the big sort of promises of big gains from the tax cut, but they're certainly very aware that, you know, many of their employers have had a really good time. You know, Amazon, General Motors, Eli Lilly, some of the biggest, most profitable corporations in the world, Netflix, have basically had a really great year because they didn't have to pay any income tax.
Yeah.
Corporate tax.
Right. Now, do you remember, right after they rammed this through, it was a nice Christmas present. And then in January, you had all these companies like Home Depot going, we're going to give our employees $250 bonuses. And there was all this news about all the bonuses. You remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where were those press releases this year?
What happened to the bonuses? I think, again, it's the same sort of problem. There were a few press releases here and there, but I think most people sort of, are on to the con. And I think most of the companies probably recognize that they're drawing more attention than they want to how well their balance sheets are doing when they put out these releases about, we've given our employees bonuses. When you look more deeply at the bonuses they're giving, they're actually pretty small if they are giving them at all. So I think, the silence is just a recognition that, it is not a good deal for most people, and probably best not to bring any attention to it.
Exactly. Now, I have read a number of reports. New York Times actually reported on it that a lot of people did get tax cuts. They just didn't realize it. They got a couple extra bucks in their check every week, didn't really understand that they got a tax cut.
Well, I think certainly there are going to be some people that did get a tax cut. And, I think it's also important to remember, there are a lot of folks, particularly in high property tax states like New York, New Jersey, that actually saw, tax increases thanks to changes in the deductibility of their state and local taxes. So, I think it's a mixed bag. But over, again, the bulk of the money in this package ultimately went to the very highest earners. So those are the people who really will have seen a sizable change in their tax bill as a result of this. And that's the folks who notice it.
Right. But, again, if you believe the myth that they keep pushing out to us, that we gave them all this money, it's going to trickle down to us, right?
That is the story they told. And, the only way that story works is that you get for tax cuts to generate job growth, what they have to do is they have to spur a boom in investment. Companies need to take the cash that we give them, Netflix, for instance, go out and, build more of productive capacity in the economy, or General Motors to expand its production capacity with those dollars. The reality has been quite different. And you pointed out in the opening that what companies in particular ended up doing was simply announcing that instead of building a new factory, they're going to buy back some of their stock. And that has no effect on the productive capacity of those companies, but it does in particular have the effect of driving up CEO salaries. Right. So it's just another mechanism to redistribute income up, and has not generated a boom in investment. Where we have, subtle increases in overall investment in the larger economy, but they're nothing like you would expect to see given the size of the tax cut.
Now, I got a statement this morning from the RNC spokeswoman, the chairwoman. I never remember her name, but she sends me an email every day telling me the day's Republican talking point. And today's Republican talking point was everyone got tax cuts and the economy is booming. Is the economy booming? And if it is, you know, could you say that, you know, maybe handing out a bunch of money and a stimulus was maybe a little bit of that?
I don't believe the economy is booming necessarily. I think we all should absolutely recognize that the economy is really healthier than it has been in a decade, and that's just a reflection of the business cycle. It's expanding. Unemployment rates are relatively low. There's still lots of slack in the broader labor market. But at the end of the day, we're not seeing a pattern of growth now that's dramatically different than what we saw 2 years ago or 3 years ago, definitely a slow, gradual recovery. You know, I think one of the more sort of creative ways to see this is, you know, you can plot out employment growth on a graph, and you can plot against that, you know, our president's statements about the economy. And before he took over, you know, there are lots of these, you know, very broad, very grand statements. The economy's terrible, job growth's not improving. And then after he takes office, you know, a lot of parallel, very, you know, excited and, oh, everything's great, best economy ever. But the pace of growth is no different whether he's in office or he's out of office, right?
So just to clarify, basically the same rate of growth that we had under Obama, but a different pitch, a different hype man.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, job growth, it accumulates over time. So I don't think it's certainly booming. It's certainly healthy and good, and we want that to continue. And, you know, certainly the tax cuts will have contributed to some degree to the pace of job growth and the pace of investment. But again, sort of when you consider the scale of what was done, it's a pretty terrible dollar-for-dollar performance. And again, that reflects that it wasn't directed necessarily to the kind of people who would go out and spend it. Certainly there is some spending involved, but it's spending basically designed to raise the incomes and the wealth of people who are already fabulously wealthy and who, frankly, don't need another yacht.
Yeah. See, for me, you know, I look at this, and I was reading an article on that there has been a bump in investment by businesses, and they went into saying, you know, some of the things that they were investing in, and, you know, automation seems to be the winner in future investment and in the investment money that we've given these companies through these massive tax breaks. So it just seems to me, again, one of these scenarios for people who work for a living, this is a matter of getting out a piece of paper and a magic marker and writing "kick me" on it and taking some tape and typing it to our own back and then being surprised when someone actually kicks us.
I wouldn't say anyone's terribly surprised. I think certainly, you know, just the reflection of the polling on these tax cuts sort of reflects that people are aware that maybe they didn't get the best deal, whereas some people who most typically their boss or their banker got a really, really great deal. So I think you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, what has struck everyone is just, you know, policy that, again, favors people who are connected and powerful as opposed to, you know, working people.
Yeah, I remember Trump coming to Harrisburg. Do you remember him with he had the big semi behind him?
You know, he was at it as a war zone, I think, something, not a trip.
Yeah, you know, he was at the Harrisburg airport and had the big truck, big semi, and he was pitching the idea that everybody was going to get $4,000. And, you know, I remember back during the Bush years, was never a big Bush fan, didn't want the Bush tax cuts, thought those were bad too. But at least, you know, I got the Bush prize in the mail. You know, a couple of times, I think twice, we got $300. So, I mean, there was at least, I go, hey, I got a Bush prize. And there was that. But Trump was running around going, every family, $4,000. Where's my $4,000, man?
It's in a spreadsheet somewhere in Washington, D.C. You know, again, these are, you know, people play with math. They play, you know, divide a number this way. And again, the number doesn't necessarily reflect reality.
So the old Robert Reich frame of him and Shaquille O'Neal being in a room, you know, and both of them being super rich on average, is kind of the thing, is what you're saying.
That's very good. Yeah, that's an absolutely perfect description of that story. But again, you know, this is not a president who is, you know, his strong suit is thinking or or facts or much of anything. It has to do with numbers or information. So, you know, I don't think we've probably learned to not hold him to a high standard, but certainly, you know, the $4,000 claim was not quite accurate description of the way in which this tax bill ultimately is going to begin to affect people. And they're seeing that as they're filling out their taxes now.
Yeah, and not happy. But I screwed up the Robert Reich story. It was not about money. It was about height. If him and Shaquille were in the same room, they'd both be average 6 feet tall.
Right.
That was how it went. So I just had to clarify that.
And that Robert Reich is actually quite short.
Yes, he is. He's very short. And Shaquille's like 7'2". So there's that. But here's the other part of this. And this is one of those things that, you know, for working people, if you're not happy today, it's going to get worse. Because it's projected that taxes are going to be raised on lower and middle class families, you know, from now until 2027. So this is the best it gets.
Hold on. It only gets better. Yeah. You know, I think what we all are probably going to have the more difficult challenge with is adjusting to when this economy does finally move into a recession. I think that'll be the real, you know, more painful challenge for everyone. And we're going to enter it really unprepared, I think, partly because of this sort of, you know, splurge of spending that basically was not directed towards improving productive capacity. It was not directed towards actually, you know, putting a lot, like you said, checks in people's hands so they could go out and spend it. At the end of the day, we're going to enter a recession eventually, hopefully not soon. And you know, state governments are not going to be well prepared, and it's going to be difficult for all of us. And, you know, the state sector and certainly the federal government are going to be less able and less capable of softening the blow to our incomes that come. So I think that's probably the more downer aspect of this, that, you know, certainly going out into the future, these tax bills, you know, eventually they're going to expire, except for, of course, the corporate tax breaks, which were permanent. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, the impact on, you know, the government's capacity to absorb the shock that's going to come is going to feel, again, for all of us in our paychecks, because, you know, the recession will be deeper than it needs to be, precisely because we don't have enough money in, say, unemployment insurance to help make sure to soften the blow.
Yeah, so you're expecting another recession soon? I mean, I hear a lot of talk end of this year, early next year. Is that somewhere in the ballpark?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, I'm certainly hopeful not that that's not the case, but I think you do have to recognize that, you know, this expansion is old. So no one knows when they will end. No one knows what will cause this expansion to end, but it will. I'm not predicting anytime soon, but certainly I am sort of nervous looking at you know, how far we are into this expansion, and things haven't quite come to an end yet. So,
right.
You know, I'm hopeful that it won't happen, but certainly I would be more aware and more expecting of some bad news coming.
Yeah, because here's my problem, because a recession is coming at some point. We know that. And our ability to respond to it is going to be lessened because, you know, I remember all my Tea Party friends screaming about debt and deficits. And yet here we're in a boom economy, they tell us. In fact, you know, Rachel McDaniel or whatever, Rhonda or whatever her name is, at the RNC is saying it's a booming economy. We're running a $1 trillion deficit this year at a time in a boom economy. And we're adding to our debt at a time where we should be paying some of that back so that when crisis does hit, we'll have money to spend. It seems like we're squandering what resource we would have to address that next crisis now, and actually probably going to make things so much worse for people down the road.
I think that's absolutely right. And really, again, you know, the fact that the primary beneficiaries of this policy are, you know, wealthy folks, you know, the top 1% are the people who are really getting from this, is also a problem in the sense that, well, you know, it's in these business cycles, it's when the economy is expanding that wages are supposed to grow and that incomes grow. You get broad growth of incomes for the middle, for the bottom. And we just haven't seen that kind of broad-based, very powerful income and wage growth. And the fact that we haven't seen it and we're this far into the expansion, it just means, again, that, you know, people won't have made up enough ground. And then we're going to hit a business cycle. We're going to hit a recession, and it's going to flatten incomes even more. And we're going to be looking, and once again, you know, having discussions about, you know, the lost decade, or what will certainly be now, you know, the lost two decades of income growth in America, where, you know, people end up at the end of, you know, now two consecutive business cycles worse off than they were before they began. And that's pretty shocking. And I think hopefully, you know, it's going to begin to, you know, circulate among people and recognize that the old way of doing things, you know, throwing money at General Motors, throwing money at Amazon, at Netflix, letting them have their way without expecting them to perform, you know, create jobs, create opportunity, create rising wages. That's just not working.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Last question I've got. I want to change the topic entirely because I want to get your thoughts on the Federal Reserve. I know, really a hot topic. But I was reading a story that, you know, this is, you know, we're politicizing the Fed. And you could argue it's been politicized in the past, but I would argue not to this extent, to where now it's becoming a political arm of the White House. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, I'm one of those economists who have always thought of the Fed as, you know, an institution that isn't as independent as we like to characterize it. I think it's certainly, you know, there's a desire on the part of the Trump administration to really rein in the Fed in its normal activities of raising interest rates. And I'm not entirely unsympathetic to that, again, because, you know, looking at how much slack there still remains, even though the unemployment rate's officially very low, we're still seeing, you know, people working part-time for economic reasons, you know, not being able to find enough employment. So I think there's a lot of slack in the economy. So I think there's good reasons to encourage the Fed to go slow. But I think also, you know, I share the sense that, you know, particularly putting folks who really have no idea what they're doing and have a very poor track record. So thinking of Stephen Moore, who, you know, the president's been trying to push onto the Fed, you know, that's certainly, that's the element here that I think is a little more unsettling, even for someone like me, to see nakedly inappropriate people to put in those institutions. Not that the Fed generally has always made great decisions for working people. I think, you know, if you live in the city of Pittsburgh, you probably should have some sort of shrine of hate for Paul Volcker. I mean, you know, his choices at the Federal Reserve back in the early 1980s really pummeled the city of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania. You know, and there's reason to argue that the Fed in the past has been a bit too aggressive in raising interest rates and, you know, hurt the economy at the expense of the growth in wages and incomes. So I'm somewhat sympathetic, but I think where I sort of fall off that wagon is, you know, the kind of people that are being put in a position now of making decisions there. It does make the institution more banana republic-like than I think it was in the past. Still, I would like more accountability, especially in the local Federal Reserve banks. You know, the regional presidents too often are appointed by a sort of a obscure group of people who are pushing their own corporate banking agenda, when we should have folks making monetary policy decisions certainly have more experience, but also really have a guiding light of, you know, protecting employment.
So you would be against Herman Cain on the Fed? That's what I got from all of that.
Yeah, Herman Cain is a definite no, and would be a terrible choice to be on that institution. You know, and hopefully, you know, there will be some capacity to push him off. But, you know, in these times, it's pretty hard.
Yeah, I'm with you. But I just want to get your thoughts. Before I let you go, congratulations. I know you're expecting a new baby, and I just wanted to congratulate you and wish you the absolute best.
I appreciate that, Rick.
And many many sleepless nights are to come, but it's an absolute joy. So good on you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Mark. Great talk with you. Mark Price, labor economist there with the Keystone Research Center. Yeah, lots of sleepless nights coming. Been there, done that. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.